So I was just trying to force myself to believe I was already healed, and it wasn't working. And then I found something called the open label placebo. People with multiple personality disorder could go in and out of illness and get much faster results. There seemed to be a faster way to activate that mind-body connection. I didn't realize that I saw the world through a fearful lens. Research has shown that if you listen to music and you can reach states of euphoria, you can have a biochemical response. And one thing has to do, of course, with human connection. Another thing has to do with optimism.
Welcome to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast, where we meet the world's top experts to explore the secrets of health, mindset, longevity, and so much more. Are you ready to take charge of your existence and biohack your life? This show is for you. Please keep in mind, we're not dispensing medical advice and are not responsible for any outcomes you may experience from implementing the tactics lying herein. Are you ready? Let's do this. Welcome back to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. Oh my goodness, friends, I am so excited and grateful about today's conversation that I had with Brandi Gilmore. I loved reading her book, Master Your Mind and Energy to Heal Your Body. We talk a lot on this show about the role of the mind-body connection, basically how our mind and our perspective and our mindset can affect our actual body's condition. I believe in it. I think there's a lot going on there. And I loved the science that Brandi Gilmore brings to this concept. Brandi dives deep into this and provides a mind-blowing specific reason for why this may actually happen and how to actually implement it yourself. She was so lovely to connect with, and we talk about so many cool things in this episode. Like I was saying, we talk about how to actually heal your body with your mind, the role of biophotons involved in that, how this has been verified with thermal imaging, the role of the placebo effect, something shocking about multiple personality disorder and what it insinuates about our mind's effect on our bodies, why you shouldn't hug your younger childhood self when dealing with trauma, the role of intuition, and so much more. The show notes for today's episode will be at melanieavalon.com/mindbody. Those show notes will have a full transcript, so definitely check that out. And there will be two episode giveaways for this episode. One will be in my Facebook group, IF Biohackers, Intermittent Fasting plus Real Foods plus Life. Comment something you learned or something that resonated with you on the pinned post to enter to win something that I love. And then check out my Instagram, find the Friday announcement post, and again, comment there to enter to win something that I love. Hi, friends. Did you know that one of our largest sources of toxic exposure each and every day is through our skincare and makeup? It is so frightening the effects these compounds can have on our health. So we put these products on to help us look better, and yet they actually can be aging us, contributing to health issues, fertility issues, thyroid issues, mood issues, and ready for something potentially even more shocking? A lot of these endocrine disruptors are actually obesogens, meaning they cause your body to gain weight and make it harder to lose weight. That's right, your skincare and makeup may be hindering your weight loss goals. Europe has banned thousands of these compounds, and the US has banned around a dozen. There's even a loophole from the 1960s that allows companies to put whatever they want in their products, and they don't even have to tell you. That's why I am overwhelmingly careful about the skincare and makeup that I use. But here's the thing, it can be hard to find skincare and makeup that is non-toxic and actually works. And then on top of that, that actually has all the products you need. I have found two companies, I am obsessed with their standards and use them every single day of my life and cannot recommend them enough. That's Counter, formerly known as Beauty Counter, and Crunchy. Both of these companies have incredible standards when it comes to what they put in their products. You can truly feel good about using them, and they actually work. For Counter products, go to melanieavalon.com/counter. And for Crunchy products, go to crunchy.com. That's crunchy.com/melanieavalon. New Crunchy customers can use the coupon code ADVOCATE10 to get 10% off. You'll also receive something special from me after your first order. I also highly recommend joining both of their loyalty programs. It's completely free to join, and with every purchase, you'll earn credit as well as other fun goodies. For all the latest updates, new products, specials, deals, and fun things for me, because yes, I love giving things away, get on my email list. That's at melanieavalon.com/cleanbeauty. You can also get text updates when you text skincare to 877-861-8318. That's skincare to 877-861-8318. So again, to shop with me and get a free gift from me after your first order, go to melanieavalon.com/counter and also crunchy.com/melanieavalon. And new customers, use the coupon code ADVOCATE10 at Crunchy to get 10% off site-wide. And again, definitely join their free loyalty programs to earn credit on every order. Hey friends, exciting news. My Avalon X Spirulina is back in stock and now at a reduced price. Plus you get free shipping and my coupon code works on top of that sale price. Spirulina is honestly one of the most nutrient-dense things that you can put in your body in a whole foods, easy to eat form. It's a blue-green algae, which is a complete vegan protein packed with an incredible array of nutrients. We are talking 100% of your daily hard-to-get vitamin K, 625% of vitamin B12, over 1,000% of vitamin A, 86% of chromium, 27% of vitamin B2, plus so much more, including iron, GLA, the powerful antioxidant superoxide dismutase, and even glutathione. In fact, spirulina is so uniquely nutritious that it was actually studied by NASA to support the astronauts. I searched high and low to find the very best spirulina out there. Ours comes from a wonderful, sustainable, clean, environmentally friendly production facility in Hawaii. Not Thailand, Hawaii. And then on top of that, we did our own third-party testing for over 70 pesticides, heavy metals, toxins, all the things. This is the cleanest spirulina out there. And with spirulina, you can simplify your supplement routine and support your nutrition in one easy step. The tablets are super versatile. You can swallow them whole, blend them into smoothies, crush them up, or honestly, just eat them like I do. And again, we were out of stock, but now Avalon X Spirulina is finally back in stock at a reduced price, and my coupon code MelanieAvalon works on top of that too. Plus, you get free shipping. Just go to avalonx.us/spirulina and use the coupon code MelanieAvalon to get 10% off our new reduced price plus free shipping. That's avalonx.us/spirulina with the coupon code MelanieAvalon. All right, I think that's all the things. Without further ado, please enjoy this fabulous conversation with Brandi Gilmore. Hi, friends. Welcome back to the show. I am so incredibly excited about the conversation I am about to have. It is with a fantastic guest who wrote an incredible book and is doing incredible work when it comes to actually healing yourself. Partly, I say partly because we'll talk about the nuances involving your mind to heal yourself, but not just your mind. There's so much beyond that. Basically, the backstory is when I was pitched for Brandi Gilmore for her book, Master Your Mind and Energy to Heal Your Body, You Can Be Your Own Cure. I was so intrigued by the title and the concept and had glowing endorsements by, you know, so many incredible people. And we were talking before this, Dr. Perlmutter writes the foreword and he's been on the show a few times. And so I was really, really excited to dive in. And I was also pretty curious because there's definitely a lot of approaches and work out there when it comes to, you know, using your mind to heal your body. And it's really interesting to see which direction that will go. Friends, I was blown away by this book. So first of all, Brandi has an incredible story, which I'm sure she will share on the show about her own crazy health crisis that she had to the point where she was in a wheelchair and in deliberating pain. And she was able to finally, after trying, quote, all the things, heal herself when she had an epiphany about, and we're going to talk about this, but an epiphany about what is actually happening with energy in our bodies, specifically something called biophotons and how you can actually use your mind to heal your body. And what I really, really loved about this book is not only is there the science and an overview of what's happening with a lot of these chronic conditions where people just can't seem to heal, but she also has a program that is very, very practical. Like it provides the actual techniques and steps and what to actually do to heal yourself. And I was going through and reading a lot of the Amazon reviews, which I always read the Amazon reviews of books before shows. There was not a single negative review. Every single review was overwhelmingly glowing. A lot of people who have worked with her, and the common theme was people were just talking about how incredibly practical this is, that you can actually do this. And then they were sharing their stories. So I have so many questions. Brandi, I am already obsessed with everything that you're doing. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much, Melanie. It's such a pleasure to connect with you. I love your heart. I love what you do. And thank you so much for having me.
So I have so many questions for you. But to start things off, can you tell listeners a little bit about that personal journey that I referenced that you went on, you know, the accident that you had, where you ended up health-wise, and, you know, the epiphany, like how did you heal yourself? Like, did you have an epiphany someday? Like what was the turning point?
I mean, there were so many, but I have to start by saying, literally, if somebody told me that I was going to heal using my mind, I would have thought that they were crazy or they didn't understand that my situation and accident and all of this stuff. And one turning point was this, that was pivotal, was the awareness that people with multiple personality disorder can have different illnesses in different personalities. And I was like, wait a second here. I mean, they can have high blood pressure in one personality, but not another, pain or seizures, headaches, all kinds of things in one personality, but not in another personality. And they can even have a personality that's healthy. And what was also really mind-blowing was that it was consistent, meaning that like if personality Jane has high blood pressure and then maybe Mary in the same physical body has normal blood pressure, but high blood sugar or pain. And so it was interesting that mindset, that the same personality had the same illness and that it was consistent and that it could switch on a dime. And that was one of the things that was mind-blowing to me. So that was a pivotal place, just that really started illustrating the power of the mind for me.
Does conventional medicine have a answer for that?
No. I mean, even when I was researching, no, there, and it's written throughout the medical journals. And there was even a woman who was blind in some personalities and not in others.
That is crazy.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And when you stop and think about it, we know the power of the mind is everywhere. I mean, placebo, that has been proven time and time again. So we know that there's this mind-body connection thing going on, or even stress impacting the physical body. Or even if you think about a stroke, where somebody can have a brain injury and it then can paralyze the physical body. So we can see there is a definite brain-body connection. And so we can see evidence of it everywhere. But going through my own injury, so kind of you asked, you know, about my story. Basically, I used to do network engineering operations, had an accident over 21 years ago now, ended up, literally went from living a full life to wheelchair, walker, cane, an absolute mess. And my doctor saying there was nothing they could do for me. And it was my life. And I was just beside myself. Like, how do I even do this? I mean, on a good day, I could get around using my wheelchair, walker, or cane. On a bad day, I didn't make it out of bed. I was in so much pain and I had a lot of really bad days. And, you know, I did all the things, the diet, the supplements, the biochemistry, the everything that I could do to try to get my body to heal itself, and taking supplements and increasing different, you know, triggering different biochemical responses in my body, just all of the things. And it wasn't working. And that's what made me really start trying to figure out what else could work. And I went down this journey of exploring the mind and energy and what was true. And it was just like the studies with multiple personality disorder. I just continued to find one thing after another that was eye-opening.
Yeah, this is so, so crazy. And just while we're talking about like the multiple personality thing, another example you shared in the book that I thought was fascinating was the police officers who had different forms of back pain based on their career, like what they were doing in their job?
Different emotions.
Yeah, emotions.
Yeah. That's what I started looking at also, is I thought, okay, well, how can we see that the mind affects the physical body? Because I just started simplifying things. And exactly that, you know, if somebody's embarrassed, their face turns red, or sexual thought, sexual physical response, or panic attack, racing heart, shortness of breath. And so I started just looking at all of the simple ways that we could see that the mind affects the physical body. And even emojis know that on our cell phone. You know, there's a little blushing face emoji. But when you look at it on a serious note, I mean, somebody can literally die of a broken heart or be scared to death. They're so scared, their heart stops. Or even research even shows that stress can actually, like research suggests that stress can actually cause autoimmune conditions. Or so there's just all of these links.
Why do you think, so you have this, you know, realization, but like you just said, you've been trying all the things. I'm assuming some of that involved positive thinking and emotion work as well. So what was different? How did you actually make a change?
One of the things, I mean, I had just so many insights along the way, but I initially, when I was working with the mind, I said, okay, well, it seems like it's all about belief. You know, you hear about the placebo, and a lot of times people will say, well, it works because you believe it does. And so for more than a year, likely even longer, I'm not good at time, go through my injury, because when you don't care what day it was and you're not sleeping and you have nothing to look forward to, it's really hard to gauge time. And when you don't want to know how much of your life is passing you by, that's where I was. And I was just trying to figure it out. And so I went into this, you know, trying to believe in affirmations and convincing myself and all of the things, visualizing, seeing myself already healed, just trying to force myself to believe I was already healed. And it wasn't working. And then I found something called the open label placebo, which is exactly like it sounds. It is open label. So both the doctor and the patient both know it's fake, and it still works. And I was kind of mind blown, like, wait a second, this can't be all about belief. It still works. So that was pivotal. But then, and then I, you know, was doing the binaural beats and the frequencies and the meditations and all of that stuff. And I was doing it for years. I mean, more than 5 years, trying all of the things. And it was so many different epiphanies, but I think one that became crystal clear after it wasn't working. And of course I could have, you know, ups and downs where I'd go into meditations and visualize and relax, and I could get my pain down, and then it would come back. And it, you know, no matter what I did, it wasn't healing. And I was doing it for like hours and hours and hours a day. And then I had this epiphany, and several of them, but one of which was this, is I thought, well, how long do I have to meditate to get the mind-body healing to work? And I thought about it, and I thought about the placebo, and I said, well, wait, if somebody takes the placebo, how long do they have to meditate to get the placebo to work? Well, they don't. They just can take a pill or a fake treatment. And then I thought about multiple personality disorder. And I thought, well, how long does a person with multiple personality disorder need to meditate to get that to work? Well, they don't. It happens instantly as soon as they switch personalities. And so it made me realize that the mind-body mechanism, that mind-body healing mechanism, did not depend on meditation. And so when I started to look at it that way, and then I said, well, okay, meditation then could be a vehicle, like just like if I want to travel from California to New York, I could take planes, trains, and automobiles to get there. How do I want to get there? And when I started thinking about the awareness that I had been meditating for years and years and years and had not healed, and here were people with multiple personality disorder who could go in and out of, and you know, of illness and get much faster results, it really started to dawn on me that there seemed to be a faster way to really activate that mind-body connection than just than meditation. And so that's, it really made me start pivoting my direction and started thinking about things in a different way.
Yeah, this is so fascinating. I have a question about the open label placebo setup. It's a really small nuance, but I'm really curious about the implications. When they do those trials, do they tell the people this is a placebo, so it shouldn't work? Or do they tell the people this is a placebo, so it shouldn't work, but sometimes it works?
Exactly. So the first one was done back in like 1965. So it's been around for a long period of time. And it was researchers from Johns Hopkins. And basically what the researchers did is they had kind of the gist of the script was, this is a placebo. It's not technically, it was something like, you know, it's not really supposed to work. It's, but some people have taken it before and they've gotten some results. And so we want to give this to you to also try. And what was interesting is that afterwards, a lot of people in that study, so the majority of people had some type of improvement, but when they asked why, some people in the study thought it was a real treatment and they were just tricked and it was a real treatment. Some people thought it wasn't the treatment at all that did it. And some people thought it was just like each one of them thought something different, that it wasn't a real pill. It was just, you know, it just happened. They got better. So everybody had a different take on it. But there's more and more of the research being done on the open label placebo. So it's just, it's funny and it's interesting. But what was fascinating further is that, you know, a lot of times from the placebo itself, people don't necessarily have lasting results or healing results. It usually can help with their symptoms. So it does take more, but you can at least see the mind-body connection there, that it can trigger the release of positive biochemistry. It can actually help to, you know, release dopamine. And so there are effects that it can have, physical effects, but it usually doesn't produce actual physical healing results. And so, but of course, you can see evidence of the mind-body connection.
For people who it didn't work, did they find a theme?
There hasn't been any studies that have been conclusive on that. So there haven't, you know, when I look at it and really, if we stop and look at it for a moment, this is what is a big part of the placebo. If you think about the things that actually produce results, one thing is this, is that in placebo studies, the doctor-patient relationship matters. So I would say one thing has to do, of course, with human connection. And I would say another thing has to do with optimism. You know, if you have something to look forward to, that can definitely impact our health. And I mean, even if we think about studies of research that have been done on post-surgical results, where somebody is out of surgery, if a person is more optimistic, then they can have much faster healing. And conversely, if somebody is in fear or negativity, their healing is slower. They also have much higher rates of rehospitalization and complication. And so optimism in general, even studies with wounds and burns and whatnot, just any type of studies have shown that if somebody's optimistic, it can also even speed up cellular proliferation. And so there's so much about optimism. For example, another study has shown that people who are more optimistic can actually live 15% longer. Another study out of Harvard has shown that feelings of emotional vitality, so feeling more positive, can actually reduce coronary heart disease by about 50%. Now, why is that important? Obviously, heart disease is a number one leading cause of death. And so we can see just even feelings of optimism in general can have a profound impact on the physical body. So I would say there's optimism, there's human connection, there's positive expectation. And so I would say there's an emotional component that is very connected to the placebo.
Question about the optimism. What is the role of how much you actually feel it versus telling yourself you're trying to be optimistic? Because I feel like there's a difference between people who just are optimistic and then people who decide that they're going to be optimistic and positive and they like say all the things, but they don't actually feel it inside.
I love you. You are so spot on. That is something that I see all of the time. And so not only is it where a person can do exactly that, they can tell themselves they're optimistic, but a person can also have incongruent optimism and expectation. And so like even in my book, I write it as positive expectation and optimism, because what can happen is this. A simple example is, let's say there's a woman who is very optimistic about falling in love and finding a wonderful relationship. So she's really optimistic, but then she expects that, oh, he'll probably cheat or it won't work out or relationships never work. And so optimism and expectation are not aligned. And so when I really see it work is exactly that, is when a person has positive expectation and optimism. Now, that's not the full picture, because we've all seen somebody before who is optimistic and excited about life and looking forward to life, and then it sabotages. They end up with a health issue or whatnot. So there's other complications to it, but I would say that definitely optimism is a key piece, or can be a key piece.
So can people, if they want to be optimistic but aren't, or think they are but aren't, can you like fake it till you make it type thing? Like if you pretend to be optimistic, will you become optimistic?
You know, I would say that it is more that you would need to be more specific than that in my experience. And what I mean is this, is that like in my own life, I was not optimistic when I was in my worst place. I was in a really bad place. I was injured. I was in fear. And that's what was real. I felt like I lost my whole life, and it was a mess, and it just kept getting worse, and everything was falling apart. And I was there for years, and I wasn't getting better. And I would say, you know, a few things. I mean, optimism to just heal wasn't enough. I mean, I had taken supplements or done diets or treatments that I thought, oh my gosh, surely this is going to work. And it didn't. So it wasn't just the belief and the positive expectation. It did take more than that. But I would also say that, you know, there was so much fear as well. So what I had to do is I really had to program it in and feel it genuinely. So I really felt that feeling of excitement towards life. And I started really programming that in. And at first, it wasn't real at all. At first, it was just, you know, trying to access the feeling. And the more that I was able to get into the feeling and program it in, the more that I started getting it in my nervous system. And one way that I did that, to kind of give you an idea, is I started hacking the process. And ultimately, you know, as I was there injured, wheelchair, walker, cane, an absolute mess, and in fear and all of these things. I mean, just frustrated and just, you know, in a really bad spot. And I thought about, okay, I need to reprogram my mind, but it wouldn't have made sense to really, like, for example, if we think about reprogramming the mind, we think about the alphabet. How do we do that? We get the alphabet in over and over and over again, and we can program it in. Or if we're going to learn French, then we get it in over and over and over, and then we can learn French. So we need repetition. And for me to repeatedly access feelings of optimism over and over and over and over to get in when I was in such a bad state wouldn't have been realistic. And so what I started doing is what I call, it's a like neurotransformational music technique, which is basically, you know, transforming my neural pathways. So I started listening to music, but not just like a happy playlist, not that, but I would listen to a song, and I would literally focus on amplifying my emotions as much as I could. And the first one I did was Beautiful Day by U2. And it was this feeling that it's a beautiful day, don't let it slip away, which at the time, all I had wanted to do was slip away. You know, I was in this really bad state, and I was like, okay, it's a beautiful day, don't let it slip away. And so I would listen to the song, and I would literally immerse myself in it and purposely, like, not like listening to a happy song, I would purposely do everything I could to amplify the emotions as strong as I possibly could to feel the feeling from that song. It's a beautiful day, don't let it slip away. And what was great is that, you know, even research has shown that if you listen to music and you can reach states of euphoria, then it can also trigger dopamine and you can have a biochemical response. And so not only was I bringing in this emotion as strong as I possibly could, but then I was also starting to create more of a biochemical response. And so it started getting easier and easier. And so I started basically doing things to hack mind programming to create a radical shift in my brain, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. And I loved your neurotransformational music technique because I was reading and I was like, this is what I have done historically. So I have this really random morning routine, but whatever thing I'm focusing on, I guess, emotionally at that time, I'll have a song and I'll play it every morning and I turn on my red light and I like, it's kind of like ceremonial, but I will listen to the song and there's always like certain parts of it that I align with, you know, being in front of my red light device. And I just experience the emotional feeling of all of it. It looks probably very ritualistic, but reading your part about the music, I was like, this makes me feel so much better for, you know, just what I've done historically with music and how powerful I find it for me personally, changing and affecting my emotions.
I love that. I love it. It's brilliant. It like, I don't know how else I would have started to access these emotions repeatedly, because I mean, there would have been no way for me to repeatedly access these emotions. And of course it wasn't, you know, I also had to do release techniques and rewiring the mind and all of these things, but it was so helpful to hack the process and start getting them. So I love that. And I love your red light setup and all of that. That's brilliant.
It makes it so, because you like feel it in your body from the light, which we can, we got to talk about biophotons, sort of related to light. Hi friends. I'm about to tell you how to get 10% off the ideal coffee when it comes to supporting your health. So if you guys know me, you know I am obsessed with optimizing basically everything I consume, and that especially relates to coffee. Did you know that coffee is one of the most powerful sources of antioxidants in the modern diet? And yet, not all coffee is created equal. Between sourcing, farming practices, roasting, and contaminants, there can be a huge difference in the health impact of the coffee that you drink. That is exactly why I created Glow Coffee. Glow Coffee is a premium, specialty-grade Arabica coffee sourced from sustainable women-led farms in Colombia. It's organically grown, and we third-party test it meticulously, like every single lot, for purity. And what makes Glow especially exciting from a biohacking perspective is that we specifically made it to be rich in chlorogenic acid, or CGA. That's one of coffee's primary, most potent antioxidant compounds that has been studied for its role in metabolic health, inflammation, oxidative stress, and so much more. The elevation levels of the beans, how they're grown, and how they're roasted all affect CGA levels. So we searched high and low to find the perfect beans naturally high in CGA and tested them to confirm that, and then we roast those beans to preserve the CGA content. And then test after that as well. Coffee is already one of the potentially biggest contributors of antioxidants in the human diet, so I designed Glow Coffee to maximize those benefits while keeping it incredibly clean and high quality. And this coffee is so clean. It's grown organically, of course, but then we go even farther than that. We third-party test the beans for almost 100 toxic compounds, including pesticides, heavy metals, and mold. Oh, and perhaps the best part is it is absolutely delicious. We're talking smooth, low bitterness. It's honestly the exact coffee I personally want to drink every single day of my life. It's so bright, smooth, and delicious that it's also perfect black for fasting. No added sweeteners or cream needed. You can also splash it on your face for an antioxidant-rich toner. I do that every single day. After the sauna, after the shower, all the things. I created Glow Coffee because it's really about upgrading one of our most common daily habits into something that truly supports your health and performance. You can get 10% off with the coupon code Melanie Avalon at glowcoffeeco.com. That's 10% off Glow Coffee with the coupon code Melanie Avalon at glowcoffeeco.com. Are you ready to glow inside and out? Fuel your day, illuminate your way. That's glowcoffeeco.com. I forgot about this. So I went through sort of a dark time of my own when it resonated with me. I think you were saying at one part in your book, you were saying that you looked back and you never thought, like, you didn't think you were depressed, but looking back, you feel like that was, you know, what was happening. And I have a similar thing. Like I went through a point of time where I did not identify as depressed and I still don't, but looking back, I'm like, well, all my actions kind of seemed like that. But during that point in time, I remember I would not listen to music because I didn't feel deserving of feeling emotions, essentially. So I would just listen to like podcasts and research. And I was like, I can't listen to emotions to music because it's such a different emotional state that I can't be in, because music pulls you into that emotional state.
It does. It absolutely, you know, and that reminds me of kind of multiple things, so many things. I mean, one, it's so like, you know, there was this part in my journey where I didn't want to, like, my brain, and it was like on this automatic wanting to find an exit strategy. So somebody would be driving me to the hospital, and in my head, I would be thinking, well, I wonder on the freeway if I could just open the door and fall out and end it. And then also, like, the trash truck would drive by, and I would literally think, could I get in my wheelchair and push myself in front of it and end it all? And then people will say something like, so you were suicidal. I'm like, no, I don't call it suicidal. It was like my brain was on autopilot trying to find an exit strategy. I relate to that so well, in that even when they said, you know, you're depressed, I'm like, I'm not depressed. If I wasn't injured, I wouldn't have this problem. I'm not depressed. I have a problem. And it was like a, you know, when you feel like there's a problem that you can't solve, it's, you know, yeah. So it was, so I just, exactly. I wouldn't have identified as being depressed. I had a problem. And so kind of funny how that works. But even to that point, also during my injury, when I was going through it, like the first year, I was just trying to check out and watch TV and just pass by time so I could, you know, we wait for the next appointment and the next doctor's appointment. And I was waiting for the person who would fix me. And obviously it didn't happen. And then they, one after another, they kept saying, there's nothing else we can do for you. There's nothing else we can do for you. And then I got to this point where I couldn't even watch TV anymore because I felt like I would just cry. I would cry. And I'm not a crier ever, but I just felt like I was watching everybody else live their life and I couldn't live mine. And it was really hard. And so it's just, you know, when we go through these phases or not phase, like challenging times, and it's like getting ourselves out of it is definitely, it takes really needing to, you know, get it together and do it, I guess. It's just, you know, figure it out, hack the process.
I was the same as well. Like I stopped watching movies. I stopped watching TV. I would pretty much just watch on repeat scenes from The Lion King where Simba's like having to confront his past. I would just like cry. And I'd watch like Let It Go from Frozen. Good time. Good times. So speaking of light, what did you discover about biophotons?
You know, incredible. Okay. So I know a lot of times, I know me personally, you know, when I got introduced to everything with the mind and just researching, you hear things about energy and, you know, 20 plus years ago, I thought it was just all woo woo. And I know a lot of people even think, you know, maybe energy is just woo woo. But what was fascinating is it was actually discovered by a medical scientist also about 100 years ago. And he was nominated for the Nobel Prize 11 times and actually won similar to the Nobel Prize in Russia for his discovery. And it's amazing that here we are 100 years later and most people don't even know that. And to even build on that, there is a database that's a modern day database under the NASA agreement that is maintained by Harvard and the Smithsonian. And there are studies even in this database on biophotons, this energy of the body. And most people don't even realize that we have this energy of the body or how incredible it is. So that to me was just another piece of the puzzle that was mind blowing.
That NASA database, it's just like lots of studies. And then in there, they have studies about biophotons.
Exactly. It's like an astrophysics database. And it's got all different types of, it's like a collection of all different types of studies, but it also has studies on biophotons in it. And just the awareness that when you stop and think about it, it's incredible that our bodies emit this light energy. And kind of a simple way to think about biophotons is if we think about, you know, a light bulb that emits particles of light, or the sun emits particles of light, and our bodies emit these very, you know, invisible particles of light. And what's fascinating is that research has been able to show that different illnesses can actually emit different biophotons. So cancerous cells emit different biophotons than non-cancerous cells, or people with type 2 diabetes emit different patterns of biophotons than somebody who does not have type 2 diabetes. And so many things. I mean, also biophotons have been shown to be able to influence cellular proliferation. And the simple way to think about cell proliferation is this, is that if we imagine dish soap, you know, if we pour water on dish soap, it grows and divides, like it bubbles up, right? It expands. And so similarly, cellular proliferation is cells growing and dividing, so, and proliferating. And so when we heal a wound or any type of, you know, illness or even aging, but cell proliferation is a key part of healing and maintaining health. And so this light energy has the ability to influence cell proliferation. And I mean, there's just so many fascinating things. Also, research suggests that it can actually communicate information throughout the body, including things like homeostasis. And so when we stop and think about it, it is profound. And one of the things that made me also really start looking at biophotons is I wondered how communication was happening in the body, meaning that if one person takes the placebo and they're told that it can help their IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, then it can. And if another person takes the exact same pill and they're told it can help their Parkinson's symptoms, it can. Or if another person takes it and they're told it can have a negative side effect, it could cause a headache or whatnot, or a rash or whatnot, it could. And I thought, well, wait a second here. How is this communication happening? And so that also made me want to understand energy of the body and biophotons. And I know for some people, the idea that light could actually communicate information throughout the body may sound odd, except for if we think about cell phones or Wi-Fi.
I was just going to say that. It's like texting.
Exactly. That's the reason you could get a text message on the other side of the world at the speed of light.
Yeah. What is the role of, so, you know, clearly you were having these ideas about biophotons affecting healing and our perception or our emotion affecting that and playing a role. What is the role that we do heal, though, seemingly, regardless of if we think about it or not? Just with like typical things. If you like get a cut, like I don't have to think about that cut to make it heal. It'll still heal. So how much of healing do you think is influenced by it'll just do it on its own, automatic programming, versus us needing to think about it or our emotions and thoughts affecting it?
Well, if you think about it though, even people who are stressed, even like wound healing, where they've actually done studies where they'll give somebody like a chemical burn, where they put, you know, chemical on their arm and it creates a burn. And then they've had people who, you know, they'll study their emotional patterns, and people who are more stressed or in more anger or frustration even can have slower wound healing just from that. And so what it all came down to, even with biophotons, what was fascinating is that research shows that our own minds have the ability to shift this light energy. And that's what was fascinating. Also, people who have anger, they could have increased biophoton emissions. And so that was kind of the correlation between the mind, body, and biophotons. But what I started doing is just saying, okay, look, I have all this information. You can see the mind body connection. What can I do with it? And so I just started simplifying it. And I said, okay, if we can see that emotions affect the physical body, somebody's embarrassed, their face turns red, or panic attack, racing heart, shortness of breath, or even somebody can be scared to death or die of a broken heart. What about other emotions? Like, what are they doing that we don't see? And that was part of the key, was I started looking at exactly that. Well, what about other emotions? And I would say another key was this, is that I started to look at it objectively. And I said, okay, well, wait a second here. There are people who are very stressed who aren't sick. And there are people who are seemingly less stressed who are. How does that work? And what I began to put together and realize was that it had to do with a combination of emotions, that was the key. And a simple way to think about it is like if somebody wants to make cake and they have flour, then they can't make cake. But if they have flour and they mix it with other ingredients, now they can make cake. And if they change the ingredients, now they make a completely different recipe. And what I began to figure out was that's how it was possible with somebody with multiple personality disorder to have different illnesses in different personalities, and even personalities that didn't have any illness at all, is because every time they switch to a different personality, there's a different emotional recipe that's taking place. And so that's what I started doing, is I started really understanding that there were a combination of emotions. Now, a simple way to think about it, we already talked about one combination, one emotion, which is optimism. That can be one ingredient. But another ingredient, for example, could be the self-image. So if somebody had an injury or even sees themselves as being like a parent who has been ill, then they start to put it's in their self-image that they're sick. And so they may continue to manifest over and over, you know, the continued illness or more illnesses. And so when you said, you know, what if somebody has an injury and then they don't heal, you know, or one person does or one person doesn't, you know, that is one piece of the pie, is that somebody might be injured and then they start to see themselves as being somebody who's injured, and that can affect them. Another example is this, is that even the Surgeon General last year released an entire report on loneliness, that loneliness can increase illness. And so that's another piece. And loneliness was connected to, you know, increased stroke, increased chance of type 2 diabetes, coronary heart disease. And so we can see all these emotional connections. And so that's ultimately what I started doing, is looking at what specific emotions, like what are the specific ingredients, and then changing them. And it may seem too simple, but basically what I did is after I healed myself, I thought people are not going to believe this is even possible. And so I started doing it under medical equipment, so you can actually see under a scan. And I even had case studies published in a medical journal last year, because, you know, I know me personally, I would have thought this is impossible. And yet time and time again, I've shown that even under medical equipment, you can see radical changes using the mind.
First of all, congrats on having that published. That's amazing. So I'm having a little bit of a related, connected epiphany. I'm prepping another interview right now for a book called Burnout Immunity, and she's talking about what causes burnout. But what reminds me about it is you were saying how, you know, people can be different levels of stress. Like, people can be stressed and they're not getting sick. The study for her that was her epiphany moment about why people get, quote, burnout in their jobs, the common factor for resilience was emotional intelligence. So it didn't matter. It actually didn't matter like how stressed the people were, but how emotionally intelligent were they. So could they like regulate their emotions and everything? And so I feel like that's so interesting. And it relates to what you're saying, where basically, you know, there are these different emotions, but it's not just that simple. Like, it's not just the emotions. There's something else, you know, beyond it, be it the combination of the emotions or how are we able to, you know, handle and regulate those emotions.
Exactly. And I would say that it goes even beyond, like, there's a few things where it goes even beyond regulating emotions, in my experience. And this is what I would say. It's kind of like this, part of what mine had to do with. So I would have said that I've always been very happy. I've always been somebody I didn't grow up in an emotional household. Like, if I remember the one time my mother cried growing up, like, it just, so it was kind of like corporate world, leave your emotions at the door. So I would say that what happens a lot of times when it comes to mind-body healing also has to do with subconscious links, things getting miswired. And for example, in my own journey, one of the things that impacted me were the events actually of 9/11. And if you had asked me consciously if those bothered me, I would have said, no, I pushed through it. I'm fine. I wasn't even worried about me. And I was worried about other people. But what happened is this, is that I used to work in network engineering at the time. network engineering and operations. And basically, I was on the phone with people who were in the towers at the time when the plane hit. And so my colleague is just sitting there, you know, yelling, help me, help me, help me. And then the phone goes dead and it's just quiet. And so there was this every part of me just, at first I didn't know, of course, what was going on, but then I saw that, you know, we had in telecommunications, we had televisions on every pillar, not every pillar, but most pillars inside the office. And so, you know, I look up and I see on the television all of the things that are happening in the second plane. It was all a mess. And so, but what happened after that was also that, you know, in the time that followed, we were, if, you know, you probably remember this, but we were in, you know, red zone or orange zone or, you know, for terrorist threat. And so as I was sitting there working and trying to help people at my desk, not only had that first event happened, but I would watch over and over again on the background as I was working all day, the footage was playing over and over and over. And so what happened is I ended up getting this feeling of survivor's guilt and also this like wanting to die for others and afraid of dying. And all of these things were in my subconscious mind. Like I had always been somebody who would push through anything. I mean, before my injury, if I got sick, instead of ever calling in sick to work, I'd grab a bottle of cough syrup and sip on it at my desk all day. Like I didn't call in sick for anything. And so it took me out, you know? And so, I mean, I would also say that I've seen people who were on their path to success, making money, doing like making millions, doing great. And then some type of guilt comes up because of something or this, that, the other. And it derails them and they don't know why. And they're ambitious. And they are excited and they are optimistic about their future. And suddenly everything's sabotaging. And so I would say that like guilt can be a piece or subconscious punishment patterns. I mean, there's so many different pieces that can come up. Or I've seen people before where they're on their way to success and they have a subconscious belief that says, you know, if I succeed, people will hate me. Or, you know, or they start feeling guilty about money. I've seen people who, you know, let's say in 2008, when the whole thing, market, everything crashed, that they didn't crash. And then people around them did. So then they started feeling guilty. And then they developed an illness because they felt all of this guilt that they were doing well and everybody else wasn't. So it's so multi-layered just because emotions are multi-layered. And so it really does. So I would say in my experience, it's so far beyond regulation. It's also like the things that happen in our subconscious mind when we don't realize it's happening can also, like that's what happened in my case. Like here I was working, doing my job, and this stuff was getting programmed into my mind that I didn't realize was even being programmed into my mind, if that makes sense.
Completely. And hey, friends. Did you know there is an ancient botanical that modern research shows performs on a level comparable to metformin when it comes to supporting healthy blood sugar levels? And not only that, this compound also supports the gut microbiome, healthy cholesterol levels, and even stimulates the AMPK pathway in the body to support cellular cleanup and longevity. You might have heard about AMPK. We talk about it a lot in the context of fasting, which also stimulates it. I am talking about berberine. I take berberine every single day of my life, and I see massive differences on my CGM, my continuous glucose monitor, when I use it. I take it to support my fast and before meals to reduce blood sugar levels. It is a powerhouse of a compound. And like I said, people are prescribed the pharmaceutical metformin to control their blood sugar levels when they could be taking this completely natural compound that has been used for thousands of years in both ancient traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine. I wanted to make the best berberine on the market, so that's why I created Avalon X Berberine 500. We did so much testing to find the most potent, pure, and clean form available. There's no problematic fillers, no common allergens, just pure, vegan, lab-tested berberine extracted from traditional sources. Friends, I am not kidding the difference I see on my blood sugar levels with this berberine. We're talking no post-meal spikes when I eat all that fruit and lower fasting blood sugar levels. It also reduced my HbA1c and my cholesterol levels. You can get it at avalonx.us. And the coupon code IFPODCAST will get you 10% off. You can also get a one-time 20% off coupon code when you text AvalonX to 877-861-8318. That's AvalonX to 877-861-8318. And you can get a 15% off coupon code by signing up for email updates. For that, just go to avalonx.us/email list. Again, friends, this is one of the most powerful compounds you can add into your health and wellness routine. Healthy blood sugar control, even if you're not pre-diabetic or diabetic, is so important, and berberine helps support that. It is the ultimate compound for blood sugar control, cholesterol, your gut microbiome, and longevity. Get it at avalonx.us with the coupon code IFPODCAST.
And it leads to a question I have for you, which is, in the book, you have this, you know, whole program that people can follow and the tools and the tips and the steps. And you're very clear about going in order. And one of the things you talk about is not starting at the beginning with trying to figure out what it was in childhood that is the cause, or, you know, the thing in the past. So I'm curious about that. So why should we, so if we do have these subconscious things programmed in from childhood or past events, why, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but why should we not necessarily start with that, like trying to find this specific thing?
You are absolutely so right. And because if we go more into the negative, we can increase the problem. And I've seen people do that time and time again, exactly that. And if we think about it for a moment, it's kind of like this, is if we think about even the widowhood effect, where a senior can lose a spouse and then die right afterwards, or somebody who dies of a broken heart. Unfortunately, you know, when the emotions are the most intense is when they have the greatest chance of dying. And of course, not that most people are going to die from their emotions, but when there's more stress, when there's more of the negativity, it can affect you. And I've seen people where they delve into, you know, just dive into the negative emotions and it increases their pain. And in fact, even when I was doing and working with people under medical equipment, I can take people and I can show them and coach them to use their own mind and go into the positive and start, you know, letting go of the negative, but go into the positive and go into the positive. And you'll literally see the scan turn from red to green as their pain goes away. And if I bring like, and if I'm doing that, and then I actually take them back into the negative, you'll see the scan go back into red and their pain will go up. They'll report an increase in their pain. And I've done it time and time again. So you can see the changes happening.
So is it sort of like if your house is on fire, you got to put out the fire before you figure out why the fire happened? Like address the actual in the moment issue before going in deeper and fixing the subconscious?
Yeah, I would also say this. There's so many reasons. One is moving towards, there's so many reasons. One is this, is if we imagine somebody who's having a good day, like they're feeling more positive. A simple example, let's say somebody goes to take a drink of their water and they're happy. They go to take a drink of their water and they spill some of it. They might spill some on their shirt or whatever and go, oh, well, I guess I'll save that for later. Like they might joke around about it. Whereas somebody who's in a bad mood, maybe they go to take a drink and they go and they spill it and they go, oh my gosh, it's one thing after another. So the more we are in a positive state, the easier it is to stay out of the negative. That's one. The negative emotion, it's kind of like, you know, if somebody's intensely feeling anxiety, what can happen? If they go more and more and more into the anxiety, what can happen? It can trigger a panic attack, you know? And so that's, you know, just looking at the basics. Not only that, but if we move towards optimism, it's easier to let go of the negative. And a simple way to think about it is like this, is that if you take let's say there's a woman who's really, really hurt and feeling upset, feels anger or resentment towards her ex and he cheated on her or whatever else, and she feels like she's never going to be loved again. And then I say to her, well, just let the negativity go. Well, okay, nice thought, but is that really real? But instead, if she's going, okay, well, I have my vision. I really feel like I could have another relationship. It's going to be better than ever. I'm feeling more optimistic. I feel more optimistic about that. And then you say, okay, well, can you let go of the old hurt and the negativity and really, you know, move into the next? And then it's just easier to make an authentic change. And that's what has to happen, is the change has to be genuine to create real results. And by the way, something I want to kind of bring up is, when we think about it for a moment, I know that for a lot of people, myself included, back when I was injured, if somebody had told me that my emotions could heal my body, I would have thought, are you kidding? I had an accident. I've had an injury. I have real problems. And yet, of course, even post-surgical studies show that emotions hugely affect healing, even when somebody's been cut open. So we can see there's a real, real change. But one illustration of a way to think about it is like this is, you know, all of the time people go to the emergency room because they think they're having maybe a heart attack. And then they get there and they realize they're having an actual panic attack. And they don't realize that they're even having it because they're disconnected from their emotions. And so what I would say is similarly, in our lives, we have these subconscious emotions that are affecting and connected to the autoimmune condition or the pain or the illness or the tumor or all kinds of things. And we don't realize that it's connected. And the more we realize that there is this mind-body connection, and the more we start to use it, the more we empower ourselves.
What about the potential of cross-linking positive to negative, or thinking things are positive that are negative, or thinking things that are negative are positive? The example I'm thinking of is you talk about when you are doing work where you're thinking back to your, you know, childhood things that happened, childhood traumas and such, you specifically say, and this is like so contrary to what I think I've been told by or heard a lot before, which was you say, you're not going to want to hug that small scared version of yourself. What's going on there?
Yeah. Okay. So a simple way to think about it is like this. I think we all kind of know, you know, if a child doesn't get positive attention, they'll get what? Negative attention. That's so, or even another simple example is this. Okay. Have you ever heard before of a child, they get an owie and then an adult comes by and says, oh, let me kiss your owie and make it better? What happens? Love gets linked up to illness. Okay. And so what happens is the mind doesn't know any different, just like, you know, a wedding song. So somebody listens to a wedding song, a song at their wedding, and that becomes their wedding song. And then every time they hear it, it gets linked up. And so what can happen is we can get all kinds of things miswired in the mind, where some people, for example, growing up, maybe they get sympathy feelings linked up to love. And then the problem is we need love. And so then they grow up and they're in their 20s and 30s and 40s and whatnot. And they have that link even from childhood that says, oh, how I get love is sympathy. And it's an unconscious pattern and thing that they do in life that then controls their life. And so what can happen is even as a child where somebody gets an owie and it says, oh, well, let me kiss it and make it better, it links up love. And so part of the reason I would say that loneliness is so linked up to illness is because let's say that happens at a child. And then let's say they grow up, they're 10, 20, 30, 40 years old. And let's say 50 years old, whatever age, and they start feeling lonely. And then the subconscious mind says, well, wait a second, how do I get love? And the subconscious mind goes back to childhood and says, oh, I need an owie. And so that can be connected to love. So point being is that when we're working with the childhood self, we don't want to link up love to the wounding. We want to link up love to the amazingness. So what I would say is instead of saying like, oh, a child is all scared and wounded and hurt, I would say release those emotions, let those go. But instead seeing your childhood self happy and wonderful and give that love and connection. Say, yes, little self, you're feeling amazing. You're feeling confident. You're feeling good. You're feeling loving. You're sweet. You're smart. Whatever that is, let me love that up. And then as far as the wounded, sympathy, scared, get those emotions out of the subconscious mind so they don't repeat. Because if we think about things like, if we think about repetition compulsion or reenactments or attachment theory or revictimization, whatever you want to call it, it is well known in Freud's work, psychology, psychoanalysis, whatever method we want to look at in psychology, it is well known that patterns breed more of the same. And a simple example is an unfortunate example is, you know, we've heard before a woman may have an abusive father and leave him and find the abusive boyfriend, boss, spouse, et cetera, et cetera. Or people may grow up and marry somebody that's like their mother or father, because these subconscious patterns, attachment theory, you know, that's exactly that we will grow up and marry somebody who might be like, you know, a caregiver. And so these unconscious patterns, we don't want to fuel them or love them. We want to understand how to eradicate them and then love the love, love the kindness, the smart, the good, the genius, because then that flourishes, if that makes sense. So that's the key.
What it's reminding me of is, so I love my therapist, but one of the things that happened a few years ago was I do cryotherapy every day. And I remember I was telling her that when I'm in the cryo chamber, it kind of feels like there's a little kid in me that's complaining and doesn't want to be there and, you know, feels very cold. And I told her that, and she was like, oh, and I was telling her that I basically was just like watching that happen in my mind. And she was saying, oh, you should like hug that child. And I remember intuitively being like, I don't think so. Like, I don't think I like placate that child, you know? And so it just, I'm just so fascinated by this whole concept, and especially with the cross-linking. And speaking of the mind not knowing the difference, one of the things you have this tool called the power vision. How did you come up with that? And what is the role of imagining things, how our brain interprets it, versus things actually happening?
Absolutely. So the reason that I came up with the visual reality was this, was that a lot of people, you see them a lot of times, you know, somebody might visualize and they're so stuck in their head. And I was doing that initially, where I was, you know, picturing myself healthy and happy, and then it wasn't working. And then I was picturing, like I was trying to picture my spine and my nervous system all healed. And I was doing that, like, I mean, so much so. And then it wasn't working. So then I would get anatomy books and I would stare at them until, you know, how, like if you look at the sun and you're looking at the sun and it like burns an image in your eyes. And so I would do that. I would literally like stare at it and then get the image in my mind and then close my eyes and be like, all right, now I have it. And it wasn't working. And the more I really understood that it was an emotional neurological connection and that getting the nervous system involved and the triggers and all of this, I started saying, okay, well, emotion, that we can't just be stuck in our head. And so it was really about creating that feeling and amplifying the feeling and getting it, just feeling the feeling as much as possible. And so that's where visual reality come from, which is basically like having a vision. And it's a way to think about it is like virtual reality. You know, if you're in virtual reality, you feel like you're actually living in it. And so visual reality is stepping into the vision and feeling it. And the more you can feel it and the more real it seems, it's like the more you can take it in. So I would also say we all learned virtual reality if we ever played tea party as 5-year-olds and Barbies, and you know, what do you have your pretend teacups and you have your, you know, we have an imagination as a child and then we think it's just childish. And so here we are with this valuable ability to imagine things as a kid, and we just think that it's a waste of time. And we grow up and become much smarter than that. And then we realize now, oh gosh, visualization is really powerful.
And so, and in that experience, the brain, my understanding is the brain doesn't necessarily know that it's not real. Like the effects of it are the same as if it were actually happening.
Exactly. And if you think about it, a lot of people do that very thing when we worry. What do? We think about something that's negative and feel stressed out and gut-wrenching and, you know, fearful or whatever it is, and tension, all from something that didn't even happen. Or, I mean, let's be honest, we could watch an intense film, you know, movie, and you can find yourself tensing up when this happens or that happens, because our mind-body connection doesn't necessarily know. It doesn't know the difference, especially when we see ourselves in that vision. And so the more that we can start to see ourselves in a new way and create feelings in a positive way, it's incredible.
A big concern or question I have that people may be wondering is, because, you know, you talk a lot about the detrimental effects of when we do dwell in the negative and the effects that it has. So how do we not dwell in the negative, but also not suppress that or avoid that and make it worse in the end?
That is a great question. And I would say really amplifying the emotions, because this is the way to think about it, is this, is that we don't want to dwell on them, but we also need to understand that emotions help control our consciousness and our perception. And a simple way to think about it is like this, is, you know, somebody's really, really, really in love with somebody, what do they see? They see all of the good. And if somebody's really, really angry at somebody, what do they see? They see all of the negative. They fault find. And the brain does this automatically. Like the mind, our minds will do this without us saying, okay, we'll only see the good in this person, only see the negative in that person. And what happens is our subconscious programming and our emotions really are controlling our consciousness, and we don't realize that it's happening. And so kind of like this, have you ever seen this before where maybe somebody tells you a story and they feel like the victim, but as you're listening to their story, you're like, kind of maybe doesn't seem like you're the victim in this situation, right? But in their mind, they see themselves and perceive themselves as being the victim. And that's an example of that, is that our minds are controlling our consciousness and we don't realize it. For example, there are people right now who are walking around in this world who feel like the world is a very scary place. And there are others who feel like it is a beautiful place. And those both people could be walking around in the same grocery store where one person says, this world is scary and it's horrible and it's dangerous. And another person is like, oh my gosh, it's sunny and it's beautiful outside. And so what happens is we don't even realize that this is happening. We all think that the world is just the way it is. And in my own life, I didn't realize that I saw the world through a fearful lens. I thought this is just how life is. And I didn't even know. I mean, if you would have asked me, do you think the world is fearful? Like, or do you see the world as a fearful place? I would say, no. Like I wouldn't have ever said that. I thought the world was a great place. I thought I was happy. I thought it was a great place. I would have said, no, I love life. Life is wonderful. But then when I started releasing fear from my subconscious mind, I was like, wow, this place is really beautiful. Like it really, oddly, it just felt, I don't know, like the sky bluer. And instead of it just like, just seeing more happiness in people. Like I know it's just, it's so hard to explain, but it's kind of like, have you ever done that before where, I don't know, maybe you buy a new car or you're thinking about buying a new car and you start seeing it everywhere?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like that. It's like you, but except for you feel happier and you start noticing, oh, those people over there are happy. Oh, look at those happy people. Oh, look at those happy people. Compared to if you're like, oh, look at, there's injured people over there. There's some depressed people over there. There's some people who are struggling over there. But you don't realize it because you just think, oh, this is just what people are going through right now. You know what I mean?
Another resource for you guys. If you struggle with food sensitivities like I do, you have got to get my app, FoodSense Guide. It's a comprehensive catalog of over 300 foods for 11 potentially problematic compounds. These include things you may be reacting to, like gluten, lectins, FODMAPs, histamine, oxalates, sulfites, thiols, whether or not something is a nightshade, and so much more. It even includes autoimmune paleo AIP status. You can learn about the compounds, create your own list to share and print, and finally take charge of your food sensitivities. It is a top Apple app, often in the top 10 for the Apple food and drinks charts. And friends, get it now because I'm going to be updating it to a subscription basis soon. So you definitely want to get grandfathered in for life at one super low price. With the subscriptions, by the way, I'm going to be implementing some pretty cool features. So I need to do subscriptions to help support that. So like I said, get it now. Before we change to subscriptions, you can get it at melanieavalon.com/foodsenseguide.
Yeah, it's like, I forget the specific fact, you might know it, but there's like X amount of more nerves or transmissions going from the brain to the eyes and the eyes to the brain. So basically we're picking before we see what we want to see rather than objectively seeing the world.
Exactly. And, you know, when you think about it, though, but It's even on an emotional level, because a partner, we could be absolutely in love with a partner and then get so, you know, hurt or upset or pissed off, whatever it is, just hurt, upset, whatever it is. And then you start fault finding in them because there's an emotional shift. Even, and it can happen even with people who are blind. So it's not even just about seeing, it's a perception, it's a depth. There's an experience to it, if you will. The brain is, and our emotional filters, if that makes sense. We experience it. It's our consciousness. So I would say to the point of, is that as we stay out of fueling the negative and really start fueling the positive, we create a shift, a radical shift in our emotions. And another way to even think about it might be this, is that, you know, I used the example of the woman with the abusive father who leaves him and finds the abusive boyfriend, boss, spouse, et cetera, that those patterns can continue. And it becomes about really healing the pattern and really healing the wounding. So we're not continuing to validate the hurt, because, I mean, let's be honest. We could all say, oh, well, this hurt and this was upset, and we can all have compassion for that situation. But when we get to a point where we're really ready to let it go and heal and change the way we feel about something, to say, you know what, I'm not going to let this control my life. I'm not going to, you know, there's a shift, a transformation in addressing emotional patternings and saying, I'm not going to be afraid of whatever it is, to creating a radical shift, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I love this so much. And speaking of feeling these things intuitively, you touch on the book about how this whole practice can affect a person's intuition. So what is the bingo intuition moment that you have?
You know, okay, so after I healed myself, I developed this ability to feel what other people feel, which may sound weird. And at first, I didn't want to tell anybody because I was like, I don't even understand it. But there's actually a medical condition called mirror touch synesthesia, where one person can feel what another person is feeling. And so before, actually, that was one way that I started explaining it. Even in my TEDx talk, I literally describe it exactly. I'm like, okay, it's kind of like mirror touch synesthesia, or you could call it intuition on steroids. That's another way, you know, I've tried everything to just kind of ground it. But what I really, how I see it is this, it's like universal Wi-Fi, you know, just like our cell phones all have Wi-Fi, you know, or our computers all have Wi-Fi. We all have intuition. And even if you think about it, animals, I mean, even birds know when to fly south, or dogs, there's stories of dogs being lost and they're able to then navigate their way back. And you know, or even earthquakes happening or natural disasters, and animals migrate 2 or 3 days before. So there's like this universal intelligence, if you will. And I mean, and by the way, there's even medical journals that show and prove intuition and all of these things. And I would say we all have it. We just don't all use it and or have the awareness. And I would say that as I started working with my mind and I cleared my subconscious mind, I became able to tap into this universal Wi-Fi, if you will. And by the way, even Einstein credits his discoveries on his intuition. So somebody like Einstein or Oprah, I mean, it's just, we have an intuition that is beyond what most people would think.
I interviewed Jackie Higgins. She wrote a book called Sentient, which was about our senses, but really about all the senses of different animals. But she talked about a study where they blindfold people and like move them all around and confuse their sense of direction. And then most people, I don't remember if it was like true north or home, one of those people intuitively know which direction that is, even when they have no idea. I think it really speaks to how I think it's very real, all of these things that we don't see that we could tap into if we, you know, are able to. And so it sounds like with you, with your, what is it called? The mirror.
It's like mirror touch synesthesia or universal Wi-Fi. You know, okay. Have you ever done this before where you thought of somebody and they called? Right. We are so connected. We just don't realize it. I think that at some point, cell phones are going to be like training wheels for ESP. Like, we're all going to have this ability to communicate, and cell phones right now are just like training wheels. I would say there was Carter was in office. Like, there's actual research just throughout history where it shows and validates that, again, just studies on mind gifts, that we do have these incredible abilities. And so I would just say very simply that after I healed myself, I developed this ability to, not intentionally, but I developed this ability to feel what other people feel. And that has also helped me to gain a much deeper understanding of emotions and help people to understand how to heal themselves.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure it's masterly wonderful because you're helping so many people. So that's incredible how that comes into play. I have one last just super random question. Do you know if people with emotional related personality disorders, so like narcissism or psychopaths or sociopaths, do they have different like rates of sickness and healing?
I do not know the answer to that. In my experience, the ingredients, the combination is so important. But I don't know. That's a great question.
To be determined. Well, this has been absolutely amazing. I really, for listeners, I think now they'll see, you know, how profound your work is. And I just want to emphasize again and again that if you get this book, Master Your Mind and Energy to Heal Your Body, it has step-by-step instructions and a program and a protocol to follow so you can actually implement this into your life. Because I think it can sometimes seem a little nebulous and how do I do that? And so I'm just so grateful that you've written this book where you talk about the science and your journey. And then you also provide a very helpful toolkit for people. So go get the book now. Is there anything you wanted to touch on or share with listeners?
You know, this is what I would say is that when we think about it for a moment, it's written throughout history that stress affects the physical body. I mean, we've known that psychoneuroimmunology shows that stress affects the immune system, or even in the Bible, thousands of years ago, 3,000 years ago, it's written, a merry heart is a medicine to the body. Ill thoughts will dry the bones. And we are at this time in the world right now where more and more and more people are suffering from depression and sickness, illness. This, despite everything that we're doing, illness is increasing rapidly. And what I would say is that you know, the information's been around for thousands of years, and it would be amazing for our generation to actually be the ones who use it, the way I think about it is like this is, you know, there's the 4-minute mile. And if everybody's heard of the 4-minute mile, basically it used to be thought that it was humanly impossible to run a mile in under 4 minutes. And then Roger Bannister did it. And once he did it, then more and more people started doing that exact thing. Now, if you ask me, could I run a mile in under 4 minutes? The answer is no. I believe it's possible, but it's also a skill. And so what I would say similarly, more and more people are waking up to the awareness that we can heal. And there's also a skill to it of how to use the mind. But that's what I see is you mentioned in the beginning, the reviews on the book, and it's exactly that. I see more and more people saying, okay, well, our minds are incredible. We can see the mind-body connection, and let's learn this skill. And that's my hope for our generation is that we actually turn around illness, that we all start really feeling empowered. And so just that, and that, and also Melanie, I have to say, I just absolutely adore you. Your heart, you're just brilliant and sweet and wonderful. And there's that as well. So thank you.
Likewise, I send that all back to you. And actually it's perfect. The last question that I ask every single guest on this show, and it's just because I do realize every single day how important mindset is. And I'm feeling so grateful for you right now. What is something that you're grateful for?
Life, being able to just be healthy and happy. And I mean, so many things, but life, this beautiful world, everything, people, I think I have a 10,000 long list of everything, you know, the fact that I'm pain-free and healthy is everything.
I love it. How can people get your book? You have a program people can do as well, a community. How can people do this?
Absolutely. I have, my book is anywhere books are sold, Amazon, Barnes and Noble. I also have programs, workshops, video course, and whatever, because everybody likes a different type of media or whatnot. But my biggest thing is I just would love to see everybody get results. It is truly incredible what our minds are capable of. And so my website is brandygilmore.com, and Gilmore is with two L's. And last thing is there's a video on it that says see live healing. And I actually do a demonstration under medical equipment on that video. And so that's also another great way to kind of just see the power of the mind.
I love it. I love it. Well, we will put links to all of that in the show notes. Thank you so, so much for what you're doing. I appreciate you so much. I'm just really excited to see your, you know, your vision of the future with everybody come true, because you're doing incredible things. And I'm really, really excited about all of this. So thank you. You're amazing.
Thank you so much. And likewise, you're amazing. I love what you do. And it has been such a pleasure. Thank you.
Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. For more information, you can check out my book, What When Wine, Lose Weight and Feel Great with Paleo Style Meals, Intermittent Fasting, and Wine, as well as my blog, melanieavalon.com. Feel free to contact me at podcast@melanieavalon.com. And always remember, you got this.